Welcome to Changing the Course, Building an Anti-Racist Education. My name is Nicholas Jones, and I currently serve in the role of Manager of Student Support and Culture here at Noble Schools. Noble Schools is a leading charter network in Chicago, Illinois, serving over 12,000 students, 17 high schools, and one middle school. Noble is in the midst of executing a massive overhaul of our policies and practices to provide an anti-racist experience for our students. Changing the Course is a video podcast series about our journey through these changes and what it looks like for grades 6 through 12 public schools to build anti-racist classrooms. Today, I'm here with Delonte Burns, principal at UIC College Prep. Delonte, welcome to Changing the Course. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good. I'm doing good. It's been a really fun year, like a roller coaster, just like returning back to doing this work after 18 months of being remote. And I'm finding a lot of energy and also learning a lot about this work and also about myself.
Oh, man, great. We're welcome to have you here with us today. So we want to jump right in, right? Can you tell our audience about your educator origin story?
So I'm a Noble alum. Okay. I like to take pride in letting people know that I'm from the west side of Chicago. So like shout out to all my west side folks. I was that student that like once I graduated from eighth grade, like it was during the still early stages of Noble. And I was that kid that didn't want to go. But my parents was like, no, this is for you. I got lucky and was on a waiting list and ended up still getting in. Yeah, like I'm so grateful for that decision that my parents made for me. I didn't know at that age, but I'm really grateful for the guidance of my family because I think Noble has been such an amazing experience for me. So like, yeah, graduated and went to Noble, and then I became a first generation college graduate from college in my family. Yeah, went to Lewis University, and then like right out of college, I ended up having a career in like my field in journalism. And then I had an opportunity to open up at Noble. And I started there as a paraprofessional and then joined Teach for America and became a learning specialist. And then went from there to like, did a bunch of different things. So like, I remember times I worked out in the office. I also helped facilitate the tensions. And then after being a learning specialist and a paraprofessional, I became the dean of specialized services. And then also did some dean of instruction work. And like currently, I'm the principal at UIC College Prep.
So you are no stranger to journeying from a student to an alum, to a paraprofessional, to a teacher, to now as the principal at UIC. Yeah. Can you give our audience a little background on who UIC is and like what students we serve at UIC?
Yeah, so UIC is an amazing school community. Like the thing I love about UIC is our mission is to create positive multi-generational change. And I'll even name that prior to me even like thinking about working at UIC, let alone being a principal, I fell in love when I saw that mission. Because I think it speaks to my own personal experience being, like I said, the black boy from the west side of Chicago and being a first generation college graduate. I believe that I have experienced what it means to like actualize multi-generational change in my life. And I think that's something that I absolutely love. I think one thing I'll say that's really special about UIC is our diversity. I think we have a very diverse population of students and staff. And we really do have a staff really committed to like actualizing our mission and finding ways to create positive multi-generational change, not only in ourselves, but in our work with our students.
Awesome. So what I heard you say is that like not only are you familiar with the journey and part of it, but you also can connect to like the staff who are here and the staff who are committed to ensuring that our students experience that multi-generational change, right, for themselves first. But you also mentioned for yourself that as a black boy from the West Side, you were the first person in your family to graduate from college, and here you are now as the black male, as a principal at UIC. What does that mean for you as a West Side resident, a native of the West Side?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. Like, I think I still grapple with what that means for me. Sometimes it feels surreal to, like, have an opportunity to be in this position, like, doing this work. I never saw myself as being a principal, and I think to me, I don't know, I think I'm really grateful and honored for just the opportunity to be able to like lead in this capacity. because this work really feels so personal when it comes to just like my experiences and like what I see our students experience. And I'm just really excited to be in this journey with our students to like really work to create that change. I would name like a shift for me in this work has like shifted from like we are transforming students to we are creating transformational experiences with students, specifically to like name the brokenness in our society and the brokenness in our world. How can we work collectively with our students to like actualize their aspirations and like create that transformation that transforms the brokenness in our society? And I think to me, I just get really excited about the opportunity to do that as a principal.
So we're coming back to schools now. We returned this year after being off 18 months due to the pandemic, or some would say to multiple pandemics that occurred across our country. What was that experience like for you as one, a first year principal, not having led a school prior to this current school year, but also coming into the school year and having to lead massive policy changes that impacted students, that impacted families, that impacted our staff members as well. So what was that process like for you, first year leading? Policy changes for our noble community.
Yeah, I think the thing I love is like it's such an opportunity to dream and like really reimagine what this work can look like. I would say it's hard.
Absolutely.
And I was like, wait, it wasn't on the application that like I would be a principal in a pandemic after 18 months. I was like, oh.
Couldn't have been written.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, there was like a little asterisk at the bottom and like Talis like, hey, this is going to be the experience. But like to me, like I've really leaned into like just the opportunity to like really reimagine this work. And to me, I just continue to remember like we're doing this within the context in a country where our entire educational system has been rooted in colonialism and not built for students that look like our kids. And I think that's what makes the work hard and challenging, but I also think that's what makes me excited is that like I know that I'm doing work to, I heard someone say before, like we are becoming ancestors. So like I'm really working to become my ancestors' wildest dreams while I am also becoming an ancestors and trying to like just leave behind something that the next generation can pick up. I always tell people we're not going to dismantle racism in our lifetime, but we're gonna do some very impactful work for the next generation to come behind us and like continue to like do something even better. So I think within the context of our work at Noble, I've been really excited about it. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard, and I think we've been hearing what that meant just like throughout our nation. And I think doing all of that when it comes to returning to school now within the context of like reimagining what school can look like is hard. But I think it's some of the most impactful work. And like to me, I'm looking forward to when I can look back and say, yeah, y'all, we did that.
It was done.
You know, right now we're just in it right now. We're in it. And I think there's a lot of lessons to learn and like continue to like work to reimagine and refine our systems and structures. But like there's nothing else I think I'd rather be doing right now than this work.
You mentioned it, this work being hard and challenging, right? What part of the work was challenging? Was it the dreaming part that came naturally, or was it the dreaming part that was hard and the implementation was maybe a little easier? So from your experience, right, what was the harder part, right? The dreaming part or the actual implementation?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the dreaming was easy. And I'll name that I think we had the privilege, I would call it the privilege intentionally, to like dream remotely.
Yeah.
Because we had the time and space to really have an opportunity to reimagine. Hard part is the implementation, because I think we've done a great job at Noble, like really creating some amazing policies. And now we're really trying to now identify like what are some of the strong systems that we can put in place to ensure that we're actualizing the aspirations that we have for our students and for ourselves, but also simultaneously refining our practices. Because I think there's a fine line and a distinction between like practice and policy. And I think we have to ask ourselves, like, what are we doing to close that gap between our practices and policies while also making sure that we have strong systems in place to align with some of those shifts? And I think the hard part is now, like, we're learning every day about, like, here's what we can refine, here's what we can make better, while also still doing the work, which I think that was the benefit of being remotely and being able to dream, is that there was a lot of things that we were able to, like, do while not doing it. And now we're, like, dreaming and doing it at the same time. Yeah, I would say like definitely the implementation is like the harder part.
So you talked a lot about your dream. Whose dream was that? Was it your dream solely? Was it student and family centered dreaming, or was it staff dreaming? Whose dream did we bring back to us this school year?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I 100% would say like my dream was 100% a part of that process. And I wanted to find ways to ensure that like the things we were working to actualize was also centered on the voices of our people. So some things that I 100% did, like the moment I became principal at UIC, is I had 75 one-on-one check-ins with staff. I was like, hey, I want to hear from you all and really understand their experience. And then the question I asked them was like, what should we prioritize for this upcoming school year? I also did the same thing for our students. And I had one in-person listening session with our students and then also a virtual listening session with our students as well, and asked them questions about their experiences. What are some things that went well and some things that can be better? But then also, what do we need to prioritize for this upcoming school year? And I did the same thing with our families as well, where like I went to our PAC meeting and like had a conversation with them, had some good food. And we also talked about some of those same questions, like their experiences. And then I intentionally asked, what do we need to prioritize for this upcoming school year? And then we really use all of that to begin to like synthesize like their input to then like create like what are our priorities for this school year, which like was around like MTSS structure.
So that's my next question. What were those priorities? Overall, like what was the themes of those listening sessions, and like what did people ultimately want to have be priorities for this current school year?
Yeah, it was a lot of it was around staff experience and like joy for both students and staff. A lot of it was also around like how are students getting the support that they need in place. Some other things that folks talked about was how do we make sure that student voice is a part of like our process, and like our family voices are part of our processes. And just we really found a way to like then talk through that, to then create our strategic plan, and then also like think through how does that align to the Noble Community Pact, and how does that align to really our anti-racism commitment, and like really begin to try to bring in some of that language into like what we wanted to be our priorities for this upcoming school year.
And so when students walk into the building, if a parent walks into the building, where would they be able to see like their feedback that was given in that dream living at UIC?
Yeah, a big piece of that is really like some of the tangible things. And I think this is part of what we did at UIC, but also part of what we did just like Global Noble as a network, is like things like the dress code.
Okay.
And like making sure that they have that. A big piece is really around positive multi-generational change, which is our mission. And a major shift that occurred from what our family said, and also what I believe, is that positive multi-generational change isn't just this outcome once students leave, but it's like what students experience every day. So one thing that we continue to like really hope to actualize is the way that we create a sense of belonging in our school community and build relationships with students. And then the other piece, and this kind of goes back to my other point that I talked about earlier with systems, is like how do we create that predictability so our students know what to expect? Because I think those two intersect with each other. Right. So when a family member walks in, hi, how are you doing? Like making sure that they feel seen, they feel heard, and like their needs are being met when they walk into our spaces.
So the current Noble experience is totally different than like what you experienced as Noble alum.
Yeah.
Do you mind sharing with our audience like what are some key differences that you experienced and like what our students are experiencing now?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question, because one thing that I name is that as a Black man, I was a Black boy who was a member of the community in Noble that experienced some of the most marginalized experiences in Noble. And I think, one, I think that's important to name, and that's important for me to continue to like embrace in my leadership and understanding that. And what I'll say first is like, I think there's so much more intentionality to ensure that our students have space to be heard. And I'll even say a word that I'll use is our students have more power in ways that I don't think I ever had when I was in Noble. It was kind of this idea of like be seen and not heard. This idea that really perpetuated the patriarchy, that our anti-racism commitment is like naming as a thing that we're working to dismantle. And I think there's been a lot of work to dismantle that. And I think that's in our practices. And also like even in our policies, I think there's more space for our students to be. Mm-hmm. And I think the question we have to ask ourselves is how do we leverage that opportunity? One thing I'm asking myself is how do I censor our students' aspirations by asking them, what are your aspirations? And then like, how does your experience align to those aspirations? And I would name that. I don't know if that was something that I experienced when I was a student. It was really like, here, do the thing that we said do, because this thing is important. And I think there were some elements of that spoke to the expertise of our instructors and of the staff members. But I think it was missing my voice. It was missing my experience. And I think a lot of our work this year is around centering the voices of the students. And I think it's about like, what are your aspirations? And like now, how do those aspirations speak to like college? And how does it align to college? And maybe even how does it align to college? And like, what does that look like for you 8, 6, 10 years down the road? And I think that's a powerful experience. I could get into some of the weeds around like dress code and like detentions and like how a lot of times the responses to like my mistakes was punitive. And it didn't teach me. At best, it may have stopped me from wanting to do a thing, but I didn't learn why I shouldn't do that thing. And like a lot of our efforts now is around making sure that students really understand like the impact of their actions, and it's rooted in more of a response versus like a punishment.
Mm-hmm. So you think about that power, like what are you hoping like students learn from being given this power, right? Not even given this power, like them claiming, right? The power they've always had,
yeah,
right? With the systems that you all put in place, like what do you hope that they gain?
Yeah, I hope that they gain that they have the brilliance and experience and expertise to create positive multi-generational change. And like what that looks like is, hey, we're seeing a thing isn't working, a thing is broken. Like not only do you have space to reimagine what that can look like while you're in high school, the purpose of your high school experience, so you can leave it with the tools, the knowledge, the skills, the resources to like also create that change once you leave here. Because I like one thing I believe is that we're all born to solve a problem. And I think our students have this brilliance and expertise where like Noble can be that space where they're able to like really lean into that imagination process, similar to like what we're also trying to do as a network.
So Noble could be the catalyst to understand that when given the opportunity to, that power that they do have is they have the ability to be able to create that multi-generational change for themselves, right?
Exactly.
And Noble is a catalyst, right, to continue to teach skills, right, to give the platforms, right, for them to be able to do those things. When you take that and you think about the different changes that were made, you mentioned very briefly, like there's no more detention. Demerits are not being used. Some of the things that stop students from feeling connected mm-hmm. are not gone now. Mm-hmm. How are students now engaging with staff now, with more of a voice to be heard? How are students experiencing this space now? Do they feel seen? Is there evidence to show that they feel more welcome, different than they felt in the past?
Yeah, I think that's a place where we have some tension right now. And I think that tension is real where our students have that space to stand in power. And now the question is, back to this point I made earlier about policy and practices, how does our practices center the capital that our students bring to our spaces that we can continue to leverage in them, actualizing their aspirations and like developing those skills? I think that's an opportunity for us to continue to refine and to develop. So our students, when they come in and like, maybe this space is just boring. It's like, yeah, and I'm not going to, no longer is our approach around going to force you into compliance with using a tool to make you compliant. It's now pushing us to think about how do we create more engaging lessons and how do we create a more engaging experience. It's no more like, hey, you stop and listen to me because I have this tool that I can use. It's like, now I got to build a relationship with you. Because like now our interactions are centered on like relationships and how do you feel seen and feel heard and valued and feel that sense of belonging. And it's hard. And I think that's pushing us even as like a staff to like really like think about like our practices and how we continue to like lean into that experience so our students can stand in their power while also like having an amazing and positive school experience where they develop the skills, the tools and resources needed to create that change.
All right, so you talked a lot about your intentional focus on student belonging and connectedness, which leads to student agency. How has that student agency led to the student experience being anti-racist for our students?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think our work this year has really allowed us to create space to center the capital that our students have in ways that serve as an antidote to white supremacy culture. And that now we're asking ourselves, like, what does our curriculum look like? And we're engaging in that ongoing examination process of our practices that allows students to take up space. And I think what that means is, like, now when we have a student who may be louder than what we're used to, we're asking ourselves, like, how are we allowing them to take up space to express their emotions? Where in the past it would be, you're being disrespectful. When actually, like, no, they just have a different way of expressing themselves, where our culture sometimes weaponizes the way that our Black and Brown students show up in spaces where we want to be a space where we don't do that. And like, to me, I think that's important because no longer are we punishing our kids for ways that they may show up authentically. We're leaning into critical conversations around like, what is true about our practices? What is true about our policies? What is true about like maybe how I contributed to that student reacting in a certain way? So like, oh, this student was loud. It showed up for me as I'm uncomfortable, but really they were just expressing themselves and my response to their noise volume would be much different than my response to another kid crying. Mm-hmm. And like, why is that the case? And how do I ensure that I'm not allowing my own bias to then impact it, impact the way that I may respond to that?
So it sounds like the burden of this response piece falls a lot on our staff members, right? And it sounds like it's a burden of a response that is different than what they may experience also as staff members in the past through those policies that were in place. That you acknowledge, right, impacted the student experience.
Yeah.
How has the staff experience been impacted based off our new policies, and like, how have you been leading and supporting teachers?
Yeah, one thing I'll say is I've never taught in a pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine what it means to right now be a teacher in the midst of a pandemic while also grappling with what that means when it comes to like working to be more anti-racist. Mm-hmm. And I think like just that intersection of those things makes it hard. Because like we are like really working intentionally to reimagine those practices. And I will specifically speak for like our staff at URC. They've really leaned into like lean into that critical reflection and examination process and like really reimagine like what their work with students look like. And I'll name like it's been difficult. Because we're in a moment where we were transitioning with our practices while in the midst of a global pandemic and adjusting to like being in this space with a lot of people after being away for 18 months. And like, to me, it just makes me think about how the work we're doing is for the long run. So one thing that I've named for folks is like, it's great that you want to reimagine your curriculum. And like, that's not going to be a thing that you may just be able to do this year. It may be a journey. And like, maybe you just have to identify small tweaks that you need to make over time. Mm-hmm. Because like trying to reimagine your curriculum after being away for 18 months in a pandemic may be very difficult. Mm-hmm. So I think we talk a lot about grace this year, and like giving ourselves that grace. And I think is really important, and also honoring like this is part of the transformational process. Transformation is not going to take 3 months,
no,
4 months.
At all, not at all.
I think, especially I've been away for 18 months. Maybe it's going to take 18 months.
Nah.
Longer to do that. And like, how do we give our, like create some pacing for that journey? And knowing that like we're not trying to check this box off. We're just continuing to, because I personally don't think anti-racism is a thing where like we will say we have crossed the bridge and we are now anti-racist. It is an ongoing, evolving process. And how do we like pace ourselves to lean into that work and not like overwhelm ourselves, because we already got enough going on as it is. And no one has ever done the thing we're doing in the midst of a pandemic, let alone doing the thing we're doing in general within the context of, like I said earlier, education in America.
So this is a journey, and part of that journey, there are checkpoints and yeah. through a journey. Checkpoints in which we hope that when we get there, that there are moments of success. And sometimes we get to those checkpoints, there may be moments of a disappointment, or maybe moments in which we identify we need to do some refining.
Yeah.
At this point in the school year, are you able to identify any points of success or wins at this current checkpoint?
Yeah.
In this journey?
I think the first week of school speaks to the checkpoints, and I also think it speaks to how this year has felt. Mm-hmm. So first day of school, we like had, it was like a half a day, and then the second half was like a block party where we like moved all the cars out the parking lot, and like students came, like we just like had food and everything. And like a good headline for that first day of school, which speaks to both the win but also the roller coaster of this year, is like it ranged from teachers participating in a dunk tank to like students and staff doing a Cupid Shuffle. Sidebar, we posted on our Instagram and like Cupid Shuffle responded and said that the staff members did better.
Nice.
But it went from like doing a Cupid Shuffle and building so much great community to also being a physical confrontation.
Okay.
As well. And I think like that's like speaks to like the nature of our year, where there's so many amazing things happening, and then like some of that violence that is just true about what's happening in our city is like also starting to impact our schools. And I think that's just a like a a product of like the amount of trauma that our communities have been just exposed to as a result of being in a pandemic. And like we live in Chicago and how that has also impacted just our city. And like the win in that is like we built some great community, we had an altercation, but then we was also able to get the families to come in and do a mediation, and we found out that the parents knew each other and like they were able to resolve it, and like students were fine and like came back to school. And I think that just speaks to like what the nature of this school year is. And I think there's like so many amazing things happen alongside of like, we do have some challenges when it comes to like reimagining that, because our name, they're like, that took time. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as easy as like, I'm calling home, this child is suspended, they can't come back for the next 5 days.
To give people some perspective, right? As a former teacher, right? Your understanding of what that process looked like when an altercation occurs, what opportunities were present this year that were not available or were widely used in the past?
Yeah, I think the biggest piece is like a mediation. I think in the past, just like, and like both, and I speak to both my experience as a student, as a teacher, as a leader, like in the past, it's been more around like, how do we hold kids accountable after they've had that altercation versus like, how do we think about our responses so they can learn from it and then engage our families in this process? And I think that spoke to just like such a restorative and transformational process. The thing I'll name that's true is it took time.
It did.
And I think that's part of what we're learning right now is like, this is, I believe, that's a right way of responding so then that we can honor the humanity of our students and honor their stories, because sometimes like we don't know what our students are carrying and what times some things may serve as a trigger. And like our kids are still kids and like there's still some development going on in their brains, and sometimes they may make a decision that may not always be the right decision in our eyes. And I think that process really spoke to like how we can respond to it. But our name, like, that's hard. It took some time. Like, we had to get the students in a certain place and then like make sure that they was in a good space, had a mediation to call home. And like, so I understand that like that's part of that piece I spoke about earlier with like practices and policies. We have a policy in place now, mm-hmm. Due to the Noble Community Pact, that tells us this is a good way to respond. And now we're trying to ask ourselves like, how do our practices keep up with something like that? And like, what are some things we need to reimagine and restructure? And I don't think by any means we figured it out yet. I think we have some work to do to make sure that like it creates some sustainability from a staff experience perspective.
Yeah.
And also it continues to honor our students. So then like it creates, like I said earlier, that predictability. Because I think we still need some work. We have more work to do in ensuring that our processes are more predictable so that then they can become sustainable. And I think that is what was true about our old system, is that although it was very punitive, it was predictability, and it also gave staff the capacity to implement it. And now we're trying to figure out what can that predictability and capacity and lift look like under the Noble Community Pact.
So you talked a lot about having these predictable practices for our students, but is it possible to have predictable practices that also lead to equitable student experiences?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that's a question that I believe we need to continue to grapple with. I think yes,
okay,
to that question, because I think predictability encompasses consistency, but it's not only consistency. I think there are some elements of like things being the same that is valuable, but like I think to me when I think about predictability, it's around our response.
Okay.
Like how do we create predictability in our response and ensure that it is rooted in equitable experience?
Okay.
So maybe like to me, I think about that, it's all about the lens that we are seeing our response to, like either there's an infraction or support for a student, like how are we seeing our response and how are we making sure that like our systems are predictable in a way, and I would name this maybe even the clearest way for me thinking about it, is like in a way that I can have someone else sit in that same space and be able to like implement like that response and or that system. And I think that's part of the process where I think we have to do more imagination, because I also mean like I think that's what makes us as an organization special is our ability to be predictable, and I think we can do that in a way that is also equitable. And I think part of that process and how we do that exists in the ongoing process of examining how we're doing in that area. So I think that's the beautiful thing about being anti-racist. Like we're not trying to say, here is the thing and we stop. We're saying like, here it is, kind of what you were talking about. This is where we're at, how are we doing? Maybe that's a checkpoint. And then like, now let's talk about, is there another way to refine it? But yeah, short answer, absolutely. I think long answer is hard. And yeah. I'll also aim like that is the work.
Yep.
In my opinion, is like, how do we create a predictable experience for our students that is equitable, and it also creates a sense of belonging.
Delonte, you provided us with a great overview of your work at UIC, a lot of the theory, a lot of the why, and a lot of the implementation of what you've been doing. But now we want to get down to practice. And so for our listening audience, our educators who are listening to this podcast, what is something that you can share with them that would lead them into building up anti-racist classrooms for their students that they serve?
Oh, that's a really good question. Here's the first thing I hope folks take away, if they'll take away anything else, is I continue to grapple with ensuring that I am not perpetuating perfectionism in my efforts to be more anti-racist as a Black man. And I'll even name as a Black man as a important element, because there's elements of my identity that I think that intersects with like the way that I show up and how do I continue to show up authentically in the best way that I can, giving the best parts of myself to this work. So one, I'll name that, because like I want people to think they're gonna leave our work as a perfect anti-racist, because there is no such thing.
No such thing.
But I'll name like a very low-hanging fruit thing that folks can do is like find ways to get student input in your systems. Like I know we have teachers in our spaces where like maybe it's once a week, bi-weekly, they have opportunities to like get student input around like how the lessons are, whether it's a survey, whether it's like a one-on-one conference, just like giving them space to provide feedback on like how the lesson is going. And then thinking about how do you now use that student voice to like revamp and change it. I would say like if that's, our students are brilliant and like amazing, and they have so much capital they bring to our spaces. And if like we all can create structures, and I'm even thinking about this as myself, I'm answering this question, like how do I even create structures to like where I can intentionally get student input on a thing so I can continue to go back and evaluate that. It can be a system, but I also think it can also be just rooted in relationships and like asking kids like, hey, how is this going? And then like identifying patterns to then revise and revamp and refine a practice or a system.
Delonte, I want to thank you personally, man, for joining and changing the course and building an anti-racist education. And before we leave, we just ask each of our guests to please read our grounding quote.
Oh, definitely. To love all children, we must struggle together to create the schools we are taught to believe are impossible. Schools built on justice, love, joy, and anti-racism.
Delonte, thanks for joining us.
Appreciate you. Thanks for having me.
All right, bro.
Changing the Course is a video podcast series produced by Noble Schools, a leading charter school network in Chicago, Illinois. If you're interested in seeing the video for this episode or learning more about Noble, you can visit us at nobleschools.org. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Changing the Course is hosted by Nicholas Jones, Manager of Student Support and Culture at Noble Schools. This episode was produced by Ash Kenyon and Rachel Powers, and it was edited by Ash Kenyon. The music you heard throughout this episode was created by Angel Mancia, one of our students at Mutian College Prep. It was mixed and edited by David Reddick, a music teacher at Mutian. If you have any questions you would like us to answer during this series, please send us an email at communications@nobleschools.org, along with the subject line, Question for Changing the Course. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.